this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Devarim, and of course we're going to be introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu's final swan song for the Jewish people. And after introducing all the places where they sinned, he still reminds them that Hashem left you hinchem hayom kechochvei hashamayim larov, like the stars of the heavens. Now why does he give them this praise right before he really laces it into them for the first couple of parshios in Sefer Devarim? So Menachem Ben Tzion Zaks, one of the great Mizrahi leaders in Chicago, suggested that the answer might lie in the next pasuk, "Vivarech Hashem Kasher Diber Lachem," that there are two models that Hashem gives brachos to Klal Yisrael: to be like the stars in the sky, and to be like the sand on the earth. The stars represent potential of each individual to be a shining light. Each star has its own unique qualities. Everyone has the ability to be a star, but we also need to be like sand sometimes, which doesn't appear as individual grains, but rather as one unit mixing together, indistinguishable from the next. And without the synergy of everyone working together, being like the stars can become a fault. So Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see B'nai Yisrael's star power, yeah, but they still lack the unity necessary. And so therefore he says, "Vivarech eschem kasher diber lachem," referring to the bracha, to be like the sand, and not just the star, but to be like the sand. We're also told that Hashem should add kachem, like you, Yosef Aleichem Kachem. Why does Hashem say that? Why does Moshe say the addition should be Kachem, like you? So Reb Leibel Eger noted that since Moshe Rabbeinu was giving the people massive rebuke, he didn't want them to think that they were totally evil. In fact, he wanted them to have a thousandfold just like them. Rizal Pliskin reminds parents and Rabbeim and so many who often give Musar that if we make the listener think that he or she is so awful, he or she will never want to improve. So positive words of encouragement are always important when we offer rebuke. We're also told, "Havu lachem anashim chachamim unevonim biyiduam l'shifteichem," choose from among you men. And Rashi cites the Sifri who makes a fascinating comment. After asking what's the meaning of the term anashim, understanding is that was there even a salka daitach that we should appoint women rabbis? The expression must certainly mean anashim tzadikim. So Rav Shechter asks, why was it so obvious to the Tanaim that we can't have women rabbis? After all, Tosus and Baba Kama raises the possibility of giving smicha to women and having them serve on a beis din. So if women can possibly receive smicha, why can't they serve the community as rabbis? And the answer, noted Rav Shechter, is obvious. Although we must sometimes compromise on our midas hatznias and do certain mitzvos befarhesi in public, that's not required of women. Women aren't discriminated against. They alone, unlike men, are given the special opportunity to maintain their midas ha'ishtasharus, the ability to be mistater, to be hidden at all times. They get the right to say, "I don't want to be in the limelight." So the people understood the report of the Meraglim, and the Pasuk describes the reaction of the people to the report of the Meraglim. They cried that night, and so Chazal tell us, Hashem promised them with a promise, "Atem bechisem bechia shel chinam," you cried for no reason, I'll give you a reason to cry in the future. So what's meant, "Vateragnu ba'alechem," that you cried in the tents? And so David Feinstein's Zatzal explained that the tents are a reference to the parents, and specifically the mothers, who traditionally pass the fundamentals of Judaism to their children. And since there was a tradition of trying that had been passed, there would always be a tradition that would always pass that would involve some degree of crying. And that's such a shame. People sometimes think that this is what it's all about, and this is what we're supposed to be doing. It's not. We're supposed to have a better sense of who we are as people. We're told about Davar and Chem Aminim B'Hashem Elokeichem. In this matter, you didn't believe in Hashem. And here it sounds as if the sin was a lack of belief. In Parshas Pinchas, it sounded like it was more like the people despised the land. Is there a connection between lack of belief or despising the land? So Rav Pam explained that there's a concept in the Gemara of Hamazaka Le'ubar. If one tries to transfer something to an unborn fetus, then the acquisition is not binding. However, the Gemara also says that if one is mezaka to his own unborn child, the acquisition does work. So to explain the discrepancy, the Gemara tells us that when it comes to someone's unborn child, a person is close to his own child. And Rav Pam explained in the name of Gadol Echad that for the outsider, the unborn fetus is a major uncertainty. Will he be born? Will he come out normal and healthy? The entire pregnancy for the outsider is an afterthought. Obviously, for the mother going through significant physical changes and connecting with the unborn fetus in ways that are impossible for anybody else, the baby is anything but an afterthought. It changes her entire lifestyle. It colors every decision. And even for the father, it's a different experience. He's thinking about how his child is going to learn how to play ball, how to read a Mishnah. He's watching the child graduate from professional school. The baby's also a reality. And so a kidney can be binding. And so the emotional connection can taint the cost-benefit analysis. The Meragim saw how great the land was, and they acknowledged that it was Tova Haaretz Mod. Their failing was in their inability to emotionally connect sufficiently to the land to have it affect their judgment. We're not supposed to coldly analyze the benefits and risks of Eretz Yisrael. We're supposed to lovingly look at it the way that a parent looks at his child's faults. The same way we love our spouses, even though they may do things that occasionally we find irritating, we should allow our emotional connection to Eretz Yisrael to carry the day. The lack of bitachon was therefore a direct result of mias ba'aretz, not disgust, but rather failure to adore. That was the problem. And we're also told, Rav Lachem Sheves Penu Lachem Tzafona, turn northward. The Medrash notes that when Esav came to Yitzchak and got the news that Yaakov took the brachos, he asked for a remaining bracha. And Yitzchak told him that even if Esav got a bracha, that bracha strengthens Yaakov. But what does turn north mean? So Nassim Wachvogel, the famous founding Mashgiach of Lakewood, explains that when Bnei Yisrael find someone like Esav rising against them, they should turn to the north. In other words, hide yourselves and stay under the radar. The best place to hide from the outside world is Tzafona, internally in the world of Torah. We're also told that Hashem gave you bracha in all of your undertakings. He watched over you for all this time. Lo chasarta davar, you have lacked nothing. And the Medrash explains this pasuk refers to the physical comforts of the 40 years in the desert, and Hashem provided shelter and food and clothing. And so the Slonim Rebbe reversed this pasuk and reads it metaphorically. He understands that Hashem is sending a message of eternal support to the Jewish people. When a Jew feels down and hopeless, as if in the middle of a 40-year trek through an empty desert, he or she is not alone. Indeed, by becoming aware of the reality that Hashem is present, the pain dissipates, and one feels as though you have lacked nothing. Lo chasarta davar. Finally, in the Haftarah, we're told, V'ashiva shoftaich v'arishona, I'll return your judges as before. And the Gemara in Sukkah notes that there's no shevet that didn't raise shoftim. But the Taz pipes up, and he says, in Sevet Shimon, there were no shoftim. So how do we reconcile the contradictions? So the great Rav Moshe Wolfson explained that Shimon alone didn't raise shoftim, but Shimon was scattered around the Jewish people, and they were primarily influenced by Shevet Yehuda, who had so many shoftim. He adds that the connection helps us explain the connection between Shimon, who corresponds to the month of Av, which is the month of Esav and of sadness, and the month of Nisan, Yehuda's month, which connects the week of Tisha B'Av and of the Pesach Seder. The day, the night of the week that Tisha B'Av falls, is also the night of the Seder. And on the surface, Shimon had no shofet, but when he's connected to Yehuda, he certainly benefited from the shoftim around him. We wait for our Kadosh Baruch Hu to send our shoftim, because Tzion b'mishpat tipada v'shateva b'tzdaka, may we be zochet to that quickly in our days. Shabbat Shalom to all.